Hello and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Amy, here with Pat, and today is Tuesday, December 8th, 2020.
Bitcoin is down. Bitcoin's down 5.25% to 18,187. Ethereum is down 7.5% to 546. Under 550. It was not a number I expected to see for quite a while. Bitcoin continues to tempt us and has not yet breached 20,000.
Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, Bitwave, the digital asset management platform that does token tax tracking, crypto tax tracking, gain loss reporting, invoicing, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or on Twitter at Bitwave Platform. So first, Compound Token outperforms the market as DeFi TVL rises to $14 billion.
You know, I'll give Compound credit. I don't totally understand this, but Compound has been one of the big winners of the DeFi fall. So if DeFi really came out in the summer, and DeFi summer was all about Uniswap, which it really was. I mean, the Uniswap airdrop and everything post airdrop was all Uniswap. I mean, that was summer was Uniswap's time period. The fall to winter has really been Compound. And I've got to be honest, I don't totally understand it. Their governance token is interesting. You know, they do actually have a legitimate governance token that has real votes. That being said, the voting is controlled by about seven different people between A16Z, Andreessen Horowitz, a couple of other VCs, and then a couple of individuals. Like, individual investors who have a couple of Compound here or there make absolutely no difference in the Compound votes. And the most recent votes have all been around really mundane things like the amount of collateral required for particular BTC loans or the amount of Uniswap fees or like the amount of Uniswap they're willing to take. So I don't get it. I think Compound has a lot of mind share. More so, you know, for something that is ostensibly exactly like MakerDAO and in some ways not as good. You know, if arguably, but, you know, I like Maker's models a little bit better. You know, they have a lot of mind share. They've really captured and they've capitalized on it. So good for them. You know, it's like these types of valuations when it really doesn't matter because they're not, it's not like you're getting dividends off of this or anything like that. This really is it's a voting token. And it's a voting token that you have literally zero value on because they did a pre-sale to their investors. So for a voting token with zero actual voting capability to be the one really winning the war right now, I don't get it, but I like it and it's good for them.
All right. So the average DeFi coin is up 50% since the end of October, outperforming Bitcoin's 38% rise.
I like to attribute this just to the price. So this is one of those things like when you look at splits, when a split happens on a stock, you tend to see about a 10% bump from that split. It makes no sense, right? Like if a stock splits, there is literally no value differential between point A and point B. If you take the same amount of value and you double the number of shares, there is no actual change in the underlying value on a per share basis. That's kind of how I see the DeFi issue here is that like Bitcoin and Ethereum are really ones pulling the market along. But you look at Uniswap, you look at Compound, you look at a few other ones. These tokens are a lot lower in price. So if you are a kind of naive individual and you're more like a naive investor, a little bit newer to the DeFi space, and you see Uniswap at $3.50. You've heard of Uniswap. Maybe you've heard about it on this podcast. And you're like, hey, that's a pretty cool token. You're gonna buy Uniswap before you go in for something at $18,000 like Bitcoin. So I attribute this to like literally it's Bitcoin and Ethereum dragging the market along, and then you just happen to see bigger bumps because there is more movement available for a $2 coin, and people tend to be buying them more because it's kind of a little bit sexier to buy a $2 coin than it is to buy an $18,000 coin.
All right. Very interesting. Next, a working group has created a partnership between crypto prime broker Bequant and Global Digital Finance, and they want to create some best practices for the DeFi industry.
I hate this story. I read the story. I hated the story. This is such a BS PR story. You know, I'm glad we're covering it because of how much I hate it. Like, this is such a dumb story. You know, best practices for DeFi should be security related. These are not companies that are doing security focused things. These are companies that are doing super fluffy governance and BS like that. I mean, this is such a dumb PR only story. It makes me so angry inside that they even posted this. You know, we're involved like with, through our accounting stuff, we're involved with a lot of companies that do best practices for, you know, quote unquote crypto. And I never really liked them. Like, I never liked these groups that get together to do best practice pieces for crypto because it's always fluffy and squishy. And it's, you know, people who are not necessarily really on the actual forefront of the stuff or trying to organize these things or people that are kind of capitalizing. You know, it's the companies that are, because they're not really driving the industry forward. They just want to sort of like drag on the coattails. So what they're doing is they're helping organize best practice type summits and crap like that. I don't know. I hated this so much. There literally is nothing. Like, if you see the story, there is nothing happening here that's of note. This is not something that's about the security of particular protocols. It's not about the intelligence or the design of protocols. They're talking about, you know, really fluffy pieces about some amount of governance and a couple of other pieces here. I thought this was BS. I thought this was a really, really stupid PR move from this, what I now consider like a pretty illegitimate organization coming out for this.
I'll let you write the tweet that I'll send out from our Twitter. Yeah. Usually I just link out to the stories, but gotta put a disclaimer on this one.
Yeah, no, I even link out to it.
All right. A DeFi leader's mishap sees his ETH2.0 validator subject to continuous slashing. Slashing is one of the biggest risks of staking.
So I wanted to talk about this one for a few reasons. One, this one really pissed me off in some ways. God, I'm just like, just angry today, I guess.
In a bad mood.
Yeah, grumpy. Because it was not slashing. So the way Ethereum 2.0 works, and this, I thought this would be generally interesting to our listeners. The way Ethereum 2.0 works is you have, basically you have a bunch of people out there who all have staked coins and are running validators. And as part of running the validator, you have an expectation to have a certain amount of uptime. If you are up, then you get coins for every second, they call it it's a block basically. So every block that you are up and available, you make an attestation to the validity of that block. Every block that you're up and available, you get coins for. Slashing occurs. A quote unquote slashing is a very particular part of this ecosystem, which is to say that when an actor is acting in bad faith, so someone who tries to intentionally do something that is bad, that is a validator that tries to send out more blocks than they have rights to send out to, they try to attest to a block that is in fact incorrect, like it does not line up with the rest of the blockchain. There's a few different situations that can arise to it, but a slashing itself basically takes a huge chunk of your coinage out, and it basically means you can no longer with the coins you've staked. So every validator, you have to stake 32 Ethereum. When you stake a validator, if you get slashed, you lose like 1 to 2 Ethereum, and you can no longer keep on validating. Your validator is knocked out of the block. This guy was not actually slashed. This guy just lost coinage because he wasn't running his validator. And that's a really important part here. I mean, like, the whole point of staking the coins, you stake the coins and you basically locked in for 1 to 2 years to not be able to release those coins. Like, that was this kind of bargain that people made with the Ethereum 2.0 blockchain, was that you would stake the coins and you would not be able to release it for 2 years, and you were expected to run your validator. And when you don't run your validator, you lose out on the rewards for the attestations, and you can get kind of penalized for those attestations. But it is not really a slashing. A slashing is a very particular terminology for actually a penalization, a penalty that is applied to your validator when you behave in bad faith, which I don't think this guy did. So it's not exactly the correct terminology. But yes, if you stake coins and for Ethereum 2.0 and you did not run a validator, you would, over the course of a number of blocks, you would start to lose money. So you go from 32 Ethereum down to 31.9998. And over the course of 2 years, you could get pretty low. It's something like, down to one or two Ethereum down from that time period. So yes, if you did stake it, go and run a Validator node because you have an expectation to do that.
All right. Well, that'll do it for today. Thank you, as always, for listening to the DeFi Daily.
All right. Have a good one.